you who don't know me, I'm Lisa Lorraine Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And I'm going to change my name, which I'm going to ask all of you to do so too, which is just right click. And it's really good to see everyone. This is a really important topic. I know it's something that we all struggle with. I want to introduce your most wonderful co-chairs, Rebecca Konefsky from JFS, Shoki JFS, which is in Stanford and where else? Westport and I don't know, all over Lower Fairfield, all of Fairfield County in Connecticut, and Jen Glazer from JFS of LA. So they're going to take it away. And if we get so large because 30 people RSVP'd, we might break into breakout rooms, really up to you all. So I just wanted to let Jen know that because I'm not sure I told her that prior. Okay, so thank you all.
I've never been a co-host where you admit people and the doorbell rings. Does everyone hear the doorbell or just me and Lisa?
Just you.
Okay. So hi everyone. A big maybe round of applause for Lisa getting through. How many people were at the conference?
1700. Were any of you
not
there?
One of these meetings.
Oh.
It was beyond. But
what this one's about.
Next year.
So yes. So that was it was. The ones I attended were great, and it was seemed like quite an undertaking. So today we're going to talk a little bit about challenging situations and sort of people who come back and need ongoing assistance and how our agencies deal with that. You know, what is the structure for that? And, you know, I can give a few examples. This is, you know, I know that there may be interest in new co-hosts, so I'll just throw that out there. It's when you're the co-host and you have questions, then you can bring them, though we're always open to new questions. But the questions we have, and, you know, in LA and around the country, of course, there's a giant housing crisis. And so what we struggle with is we have some financial assistance programs, some sectarian, some non-sectarian, but a good portion of the program I supervise is that we apply to the Jewish Federation. And the question is, how for us do we deal with more chronic situations? Because what they want to know is, well, what's the plan, you know, that will help in certain situations if there's a plan? And a lot of times what we have, and maybe people can give some examples or after I give one example to see if others deal with this, is maybe someone earning SSI, which is about $900 a month in LA. They'll have maybe CalFresh now. They'll have Medi-Cal. And they'll be living in their car. And we'll be asking for like a car payment or something, but there's kind of no plan sometimes, or people who just keep coming. And there's not a huge earning potential there in certain situations. So I guess first, just a show of hands, is this something that other agencies deal with? Maybe half?
When I was at JFS, we dealt with it a lot.
So raise your hand if this isn't something you come across. Okay, so this is something everyone, oh, Janice, you don't have this.
No.
She's got her program.
We don't have where they're living out. We wouldn't, that's not a situation that we're often presented with.
Got it. So maybe for people who are presented with that, maybe if you want to share where your agency is, we can see in the right click and sort of what kind of situations you're dealing with.
See if I can push one of these people through the Norwalk grant.
So wait, Jen, do you want people to talk about what you originally asked, or
more chronic situations?
Right.
Whether it doesn't have to be living in the car, but maybe who people who continually come back and are asking for help, and how do you deal with that as an agency, or what do you do?
Right. So, what do people do?
Well, you know, it really just depends. You know, we try to come up with a plan. And as we know, some of these plans take time. For example, you know, if someone's on Social Security, we want to suggest that they, you know, apply for subsidized housing. So that takes time. And, you know, at least if someone is ultimately able to get into a housing situation where their rent is 30% of their income, then they're going to be in a situation that's much more sustainable. You know,
is that something easily doable? I mean, I know in LA, that's something very long waiting list, closed waiting list.
Yeah, it's not totally, it's not easy. And when I say time, it could be 6 months, it could be a couple years, you know. So, you know, are we able to be a bridge for that long? Not always. You know, so there's not an easy answer here. I mean, you know, I will say that occasionally, of course, we cannot do this for many, but, or for the masses, but in some situations, depending on different circumstances, a client may, we may know up front, this client's going to be with us for a while. And we may offer a stipend, you know, of X number of dollars per month.
All right.
And, you know, and then reassess that stipend every 3 to 6 months.
What could that stipend look like?
I don't know, like in terms of numbers.
Yeah.
It could be anywhere from $100 a month to usually $350 a month.
I see.
And another thing that we do in certain situations is, you know, if a client is affiliated with their synagogue, then we will partner with the rabbis, you know, with the synagogue. And often, not often, but sometimes, you know, they will contribute to helping a client. So they will send funds to us, not specifically for that client, because you obviously cannot do that, mm-hmm. but, you know, to help clients like person A,
B, or C. Fund.
Yeah. So it's just a way you know, it's a partnership that's really helpful.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you. And it sounds like this comes up, maybe not all the time, but is there a large number of Jewish community members in Houston who are in poverty, who are really struggling with basic needs?
Yeah. I mean, we serve many. Yes. Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, as you know, I mean, we've kind of been, it feels like we've been in more disaster mode for a while. So we're just, years. You know, trying to get into a stable normal without a natural disaster. So, you know, that's just exacerbated things.
I'm sure. So we can't send people to Houston. Let me see where else there might be. It's still a 6 month to a 2 year waiting list for low income housing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the client has to be open to being mm-hmm. maybe in a part of the city they're not used to or comfortable with. And, you know, yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of the work, right? Is trying to figure out what the options are, and then the client has the choice of options they may not wish to have. But then sometimes we have situations where the options are really, I mean, we're working with one right now in the Jewish community, older, sort of, I don't know, taken care of to some degree, and now is looking at shared housing in her 70s. So, you know, but there's not a permanent solution in these types. So that's, we have a safety net programs for the whole community and a sector of the Jewish community. And what does a safety net program look like in more chronic situations? And then what can we do? Who else? Yeah.
And I think this is just so specific to each city. Like, you know what I mean? An example that I may give for Houston may not be relevant somewhere else.
But I think how far our agencies go and what that looks like is interesting to look at. You know,
and I'll just say one other thing. You bring up chronic situations. I met with a client last week who fell into that category, chronic situation, where homeless and, you know, just needs true wraparound services, which we provide. However, going to a shelter and accessing housing through a shelter is going to be a much better situation for them than us trying to take care of that person. So I think it's also recognizing our own limitations and when other resources might be more appropriate.
Was that person willing to go to that?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, she actually really was. Mm-hmm. And that's not easy. I can't say that that's often someone's on board with that, but she and her common law spouse were.
That's great. Who else could share? Thank you, Adele. Who else could share from their community? Amy?
Yeah, I would just say, actually, I'm thinking of two different things. I identify so much with what you're saying, Adele, and what's been mentioned before. We also try to reframe it a little bit differently, maybe just to get our own spirits up with the whole thing. But that the fact that so many of the clients who come to us with ongoing and chronic issues, it's going to take little steps. And even though we may think we have this great solution to kind of get them, quote unquote, on their feet, it may take several times of them trying us out and in little pieces before they're ready and willing to embrace some major changes that would get them on that road. So there's that piece of it. The other thing I also wanted to mention is just one program that we have here in our agency that's sponsored through our federation. It's not a huge program, and especially this past year, we haven't done much with it for obvious reasons, but it's called Medium-Term Housing. And it was special funding that was set aside for very, very clearly vetted and screened clients who are in that category of being chronic, mostly around housing. And what we would do is, even though we usually will do one amount of funding or one grant a year per family or per client, this would be a different approach where the goal would be sustainable and stable housing. And our staff would enter into a written agreement with goals and steps of what would be taken to get to that housing. And in the meantime, we would provide ongoing subsidies, and that could be sometimes up to $1,000 a month over a period of time. As I said, this past year, everything kind of switched around, but the year before we had four clients, really small, but four clients who really made it to their goal of finding housing. And it was very, very intensive work. But again, these were clients that we knew were willing to engage. And if they pulled back and were not continuing, we would not be continuing our subsidies.
Fascinating. So if I could ask a couple of follow-ups on that. So were they families or could they be individuals?
It happened that these all happened to be single mothers with children.
And was it sectarian or non-sectarian?
It was all Jewish.
Jewish, okay. And
yeah,
was it?
It came out of the Anti-Poverty Initiative with CJP.
Okay, and you know, I think it might be interesting if because I think that's a lot of some of our challenges and is figuring out, okay, if you're going to offer more intensive, because we have a grant program as well, showing steps, but sort of understanding how you screened. And because it sounds like you made a much bigger investment, but you had a back and forth where it was. And how many social workers? One social worker worked on that because they were only.
No, the clients that we accepted into it were spread. It happened. Were spread among our staff, and even now we have one staff who's working with one family right now that we have active.
And would it be like almost at least weekly, even more frequent contact, helping to secure apartments, that level of intensity?
It's that level of intensity. It happens with the family that we're working with now. Just to give an example, this is a single mom with a high school son who works but doesn't make a lot of money, is in an apartment in a fairly nice area of Boston. Primarily so her son can finish high school. He's a senior and he's going to college next year. And she's had recurrent breast cancer. And there were also some custody issues where the court was making her pay some money to the husband, the ex-husband, and things like that. So she would periodically show up at our door needing help with her rent. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because she wasn't doing, quote unquote, what she should, or that she didn't want to make it right, but her rent was higher than what she could afford, really. And she was carrying credit card debt, and she was really kind of running from crisis to crisis, a lot of it fueled by the medical stuff. So we looked at her and we said, you know what, this is like the third time in 3 years that she's come back to us for rental assistance. But she clearly was engaged, clearly wanted to do something about her situation. So the caseworker that was working with her, the social worker that was working with her, brought her to me in the sense of, you know, do you think this would be a good one for medium-term assistance? And we said, yeah. And we put together a plan, not just in terms of looking for housing, which she was doing. She was applying for lotteries and subsidized and affordable and all sorts of things. But there were other things that she was doing too. She met with a financial advisor. She decided on a particular credit card she was going to pay down. She decided when she would move after her son started college. And in the meantime, she negotiated a lower rent with where she is now. And so, I mean, all this was with ongoing check-ins. And in the meantime, she paid half her rent. We paid the rest.
That's an amazing program.
That's a dedicated social worker who can spend the time to do that. And there's money that you must have. Like, you know, I think about the smaller agencies or maybe agencies that don't have that kind of funds. Like, what do they do when people are coming back left, right, and center? Because that's when I was there, that happened a lot. You have a definite amount of money. And you can't just keep on giving it away.
Right. So, and there's not an anti-poverty initiative.
And there's not right. So what do other agencies that are more in that realm do?
I don't know if I can just bring something up that happened with us.
Sure.
Is that okay? We have a lot of similar situations where we help people pretty much who are in chronic situations, but we did have one sort of more unusual situation more recently where the client has a lot of health issues, severe health issues, and also addictions. And so what he was doing is whenever he got his income, he would get his, I think now he's getting pension, but it's a small amount. It would disappear immediately. And this went on for actually several months. The social worker wasn't aware of it until he was going to get evicted. Mm. And then the social worker was made aware and it came to me. And we had to make a plan with this because he's not going to get better. He's dying, but I don't know when. And he's an addict, which is a very bad combination. And so we had to make a deal with the landlord so that they wouldn't evict him. And we did. And the agreement was that this guy, as soon as he gets his pension check, he transfers the agency the money. Uh-huh. So we get it and then we pay his rent, and we've been doing that. So we paid a big chunk of what he owed. He's paying the rest. We made an arrangement with him and now it's every month. He e-transfers us as soon as the money goes into his account and we pay it. And that's the only way he got to stay. Anyways, I just thought I'd share that just because it's something that we've never done before and it's been working. We've probably been doing that for about the last handful of months.
And you had to get, I assume, some type of clearance to get money transferred into a JFS account. I mean,
it's actually pretty easy. I don't know what it's like. I mean, I'm in Canada. Okay.
With a client okay. putting money into our account, I can't imagine I'd be able to
It gets transferred to an email address, which there's a couple of us who are on the bank account. And it automatically then goes into our bank account. We get a notice that there's an e-transfer. You know, again, this is how it works in Canada. I don't know what it's like in the States, but
how big's your agency? Again, I'm trying to think. How many people, like the clearances I would need to go through to try to figure out how to get, I mean, I just can't imagine, it just sounds flexible to me.
We somehow make things work. I mean, in terms of on staff, we have about 35 between full-time, part-time. I probably do about 20 financial assistants regularly every month where most of them have been pretty chronic. It's never going to change. A lot of them are mental health clients where we give them, I don't know, again, we give them gift cards from one of the stores in the city. And we do monitor it every 3 months. But some of them have been going on for years.
So Shelley, can I ask you, like, when you're in those situations, is there just a maximum? Like, this is how much you get, when do you say no then? Because is it just you've reached your, like, we have a program in West Hollywood where someone can get up to 500 or some amount a year, help with bills, and then it starts over. Like, how do you manage that?
Yeah, we don't have a maximum.
That must be so loosey-goosey then.
No, it isn't. Every 3 months, the social worker has to prepare a new request. And I do review it with the social workers every 3 months. Every year, unless we know the situation's changed, we need a complete financial application. So we ask for everything updated. I ask for their bank statements. I try to monitor what they're doing and try to make suggestions to make things, you know, we always do have a plan, but for some people, I mean, it's never going to change. And we know that. I would say the maximum we would do for a family, which we don't do many of these, would be 300 a month. Majority of them, we look at about 100 to 150 a month. We do bus passes. We do bus tickets.
Do you work with anyone who's homeless? Are there?
We've had it where we make sure they're not homeless. So fortunately, we've come to the rescue so that they're not homeless.
Shelley. So it's Bonnie from Montreal. My video camera was working 10 minutes ago and now it's not working. So sorry about that, but I'm here. So another Canadian for you Americans. We also have an administration of funds program. We have 100 clients that we do that for. So basically it's a client who can't manage, or, you know, the clients who are chronic and keep coming back with unpaid rent. So we manage their funds, we pay all their fixed expenses, we receive their sources of income, whether it's welfare, even their salaries. We have clients at the sheltered workshop that we receive their paychecks and we pay their fixed expenses. We give them the balance. We could do it weekly, biweekly or monthly, and then we help them budget that amount of money as well. So we have 100 clients that we're doing this for as well.
You've got that fabulous program. You know, you're like 100 steps ahead of the game with that.
Well, we have a budgeting. What? Sorry?
You're like the trustees.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah. Well, yes. Right. If we have, let's say, families who have, we also have a Jewish Community Foundation if we're talking large sums of money or aftercare, the parent dies, they have nobody to take care of their sons. Those are larger sums of money, you know, that we could be investing and managing. We become sort of like, you know, executors, so to speak. Yeah. But this one is for our clients. Some could be on welfare, some could have paychecks, but we do administer the funds, and that way we don't have to worry about the eviction anymore. So it's along the same lines as what Shelley's talking about, but it is an invaluable program. And like I said, we'll give them the balance And then we'll help them budget that balance to make sure that they're managing it. And if they can't manage it on a monthly basis, we'll give it to them on a weekly basis. And some of those clients we will supplement if they fall into our community program criteria, we will supplement them depending on the size of the family and their needs.
I have a question on that. So you're like a rep payee is what I think we would call it here. And like, who funds that? That sounds like very intensive work. So who funds like managing the funds and paying them out and paying the bills?
We have an administration of funds worker, and she's on a salary, and that's her job. So
right. But is that funded through your fundraising, or is that a government contract? Like, how does that?
Well, we have our federation. It's a big umbrella. We've got a lot of agencies. I mean, if you look at Montreal, we've got a lot of agencies. OMETS is what we're called. In Hebrew, it means courage. But we are formerly Jewish Family Services. We're about 100 people here. But we have a lot of sister agencies. We have Cumming Center for Seniors, big establishment, and then we have a lot of sister agencies out there in the community. We have a women's shelter. We have a lot of things going on, funded from the community. So our administration of funds program is a hired person. That is her position. That's her job, and she's on salary. It's part of our operating costs. All our workers are part of our operating costs.
Yeah. I understood, but sometimes, like, if we were going to start something like that at JFS, we would need like a. We wouldn't have the ability to necessarily do that.
You'd have to fundraise for it or get money.
For it specifically, and it would be significant. What about, maybe I should move to Canada. What about...
I'm wondering about St. Louis, because we have two people from St. Louis on. That's what I was going to say. What were you going to ask, Jen?
Same, about some other programs, okay. Yep.
Anyone want to talk from St. Louis?
Sorry. Hi.
Oh, it's Miriam. Hello.
It's Miriam. I was listening in, so thank you all. Kyla is fairly new, and Kyla and I haven't even met, actually. Hi, Kyla. So I don't know if Kyla's prepared to speak, but
Kyla's
what
gone.
Specifically...
Hi, Kyla.
Oh,
I lost her. I don't see her face anymore. Is she on?
She's here. I see her.
Okay, yep. Good.
Waving.
Welcome.
I think,
welcome,
Kyla, it's your first week, right? That would just be mean.
But this is our first week. I'm so glad that you're here with us. Welcome.
So am I. She's going to work on our intake and case management. And we're actually working on integrating our separate financial assistance program into our intake case management so that, because right now, really, people have to call and ask for cash assistance, and then they get to a case manager who does financial assistance. So we actually have quite a bit of funding, especially since COVID, to distribute. And we always had tens of thousands of dollars to give out. And we're just really, but she does it in a fairly strategic way. We're just trying to maximize how many people get that funding and use it more as the last dollar than the first dollar. So that when people call and they're in crisis, the goal is I came on late also, but to really help people with budgeting and with finding a stable source of housing and all of the things they might need. And they might need some cash assistance to pay their rent or their mortgage so they're not, so they don't lose their house or their home while they're moving towards more, not self-sufficiency, but just financial stability. Mm-hmm. If they have to apply for government or move to more stable housing. So we're just really trying to, we've done a lot of great stuff, but it's really been a lot of handing out the money without putting the whole case management program together with it.
So your cash assistance had been a separate arm where people can call and say, I have an emergency. And then there's sort of a brief assessment and then they receive some.
It's yes, but some people get that over a longer period of time. So we're just trying to, so it could be for 6 months they need it. And there are some people who it's been a really important safety net for many years. And we're trying to start earlier so that it's not a long-term safety net. But it might be for some people. We'll see.
So you have some long-term clients who get money over a period of years, maybe if they really are just not. And
it may be just to pay their energy bill so that, you know, everything else is covered with all of their Social Security or this or that. But there's always this, you know, $100 or medicine or.
Yeah.
Right.
That's helpful to hear. So it sounds like is this sectarian? Is this Jewish community or all community?
So it was always just the Jewish community. The money came from funds or does come from funds through Federation. So it's just Jewish. We have applied for grants from United Way, like during COVID, especially where we got $10,000 to distribute to any, you know, of any faith or any race or anything.
Yeah.
Federation also expanded their definition during COVID. So people who work in the Jewish community but aren't Jewish could access the cash funds for the last year and have continued that.
How many people, I just want to ask that because we had that for the Woolsey Fire. That for people who, I mean, it's a many disasters ago, but that was one grant where the Federation said it was for people who worked in the Jewish, a lot of the Jewish camps in LA, people who worked there, a couple lost their homes because they lived on site. Generally, our Jewish community funds from the Federation are for the Jewish community. How many people's Federation also include people who work in the Jewish community, whether Jewish or not? Houston, Seattle, now St. Louis, right?
At least for now, yes, I'll raise my hand.
Interesting.
I think that's a really, you know, important distinction that, you know, potentially you should go to boards. People should go to boards because you're working within a Jewish community. The Jewish community should be able to support you, you know, and it's something new and it does expand the reach a little bit.
Yeah, and that came up also in the conference.
It's that's the first time I've really heard of it, but I think it makes a lot of sense.
I was going to say for the fire, it was just, you know, it was important. It came up reverse. It came up like people are reaching out who work at Camp Ramah or JCA Shalom or wherever they worked, but we're going to not be able to help them because they're not Jewish. Like it didn't make sense. And I think the Federation, which was the funder, because we're the, you know, we're servicing it, said, okay, you can do it in this case. But I think it is a challenge. And interesting. Miriam, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, all I was going to say is that because I don't know how common this is for other JF and CSs or JFSs, but JFS in St. Louis serves, you know, we serve 45,000 to 50,000 people a year. And as you can imagine, the smallest percentage of that now is Jewish. Some of our programs are only for Jewish people. But because of that, we have a lot of older adult services that are for Jewish and the non-Jewish community. And we just applied for a grant for how much money? About $75,000 of the money we applied for is for direct cash assistance to older adults of any faith, any background, anything over the age of 60. So that's a local organization that we applied for it from, the St. Louis City Senior Fund. But they were really impressed that because of our infrastructure that was built because of the Jewish community, they have faith and trust because they know how important it is to have those funds just to help people while you're helping them get to a different level of financial security. So we haven't received the award yet, but I'm pretty hopeful about it. So because of all the funds we distribute for the Jewish community, it really put us in a good place and some of those funds will go back to the Jewish community also.
So Miriam, let me ask you
question.
Something. Oh, sorry, I just wanted to say, Miriam just happens to be the CEO of, you know, of her JFS in St. Louis. But I'm wondering if the people that worked in the field came to you and said, this is what we need, this is what I see, or if you just saw it, because sometimes people who are working in the field feel like they don't have that kind of, power to, you know, raise the money or get the funding. But, you know, it's important that those in the field talk to the people that are the ones who are getting the money so they know what they need, right? So I don't know how it came in your organization. Was it from you or was it from the people that are working in the field?
That's a great question. Certainly they share with us depending on the supervision or the conversation that I happen to be, because usually I'm not in those environments. Mm-hmm. But when I hear about certain clients, because the person who supervised the financial assistance person is no longer here. And so I stepped in just temporarily because I really wanted to learn how we did it. And so that's why I've been a little more involved. So I heard what they were struggling with and what kinds of requests were coming from them, from the older adult services to the financial assistance manager and from other departments. And so when we got a grant, like an RFP for a grant, it clicked in my mind because they had mentioned financial assistance in the grant. So part of it was that in my role, I get to see all the pieces, but I would really encourage you, Lisa, that's a really important point. Unless find the way that you can communicate with your CEO. I happen to be sitting right at the table when I heard it from them, but you all know, and that would be important to find a way to communicate with the people who are paying attention to fundraising and right. grant opportunities.
That's what I thought. Sorry, yep. Amy. You were going to say something? I cut you off. You're muted.
Yeah, I was just going to ask a question. If when you're talking about providing financial assistance, I know there's gift cards, but are you talking about providing money into the hands of clients or paying specific bills on their behalf?
Are you asking me that question, Amy?
Anybody?
Yeah. Oh. We only pay it to the provider, the yeah. landlord or the pharmacy or.
I think we've had this conversation. Does anyone pay money directly to the clients?
Rarely, very rarely.
Yeah, I think.
In Stamford, we definitely do not put money in people's hands other than grocery cards.
Yeah, same.
We don't. We have an agreement now in Cleveland, though. We did have just a general understanding that the dollars are limited, that they're one time, et cetera. But we had an issue with the client who got some money where we paid the vendor, and then they weren't happy with what the vendor did. So they wanted to use our check to be able to prove in a court that the work had been done in an inferior basis. And we weren't willing to provide the check because that was between us and the contractor. So since then, we now have a more extensive agreement that indicates that whatever it is, it's between JFSA and the vendor.
Interesting. I feel like that would probably be good to put on the shared drive.
Yeah, I will do that. That's it's literally relatively new.
We had something with a dental grant where they wanted to sue the dentist, and it was that changed the funder's release, and it wasn't our grant. But what about, I'm going to call on a couple people. I was going to call on either Columbus or Seattle, Raleigh. How about Columbus? Lydia?
Hi.
Hi, Lydia.
Hi. We were actually just talking about the situation in our team. So our process is that clients come through the intake and they ask for financial assistance. If they're Jewish, they have to be assigned a case manager and like work a service plan in order to receive financial assistance. And then we don't have financial assistance for clients who are not Jewish. So we're trying to establish kind of a reverse of what St. Louis just said. So like we want to be able to provide more of that, just like one time, you don't need to go through the case manager stuff. Because sometimes people just need like one electric bill paid and that's it. Especially because of the pandemic, it's less, you know, people living in chronic poverty and people who are just experiencing effects of the pandemic. A thing we talked about this morning is like we have this situation where we end up with families. So like we maybe saw grandpa and then we saw mom and then now we have granddaughter. And so we've seen like all these generations of families that keep coming through and keep needing assistance, which is like very clear the culture of poverty. But like that's what we were talking about this morning is like, okay, how do we keep the next generation from needing our services in 15 years?
And how old are the, like when you say the next generation, so are you seeing people in their 20s and 30s coming to you or more 40s?
Yes. So I have a few like late 20s, early 30s single moms mm-hmm. who I actually have like cousins who are, like it's literally the whole family is like receiving services and they have for years. So I do case management for like anybody under 65 and it really is, it's women needing assistance, mostly moms. And I think part of the issue too is like, just like everywhere we have a housing shortage. Mm-hmm. We have two places that are accepting applications and the shortest wait is a year for housing. So
what happens in those situations? Do you bridge them? Do they have to go into some type of homeless shelter? Are they staying with family?
So the few situations I have like that right now, we're helping to pay bills. Mm-hmm. And then we also have career services at our JFS. So like they have to be working with a career coach and their case manager to be getting assistance.
I'm hearing is clear contracting and sort of clear agreements up front, like what is involved in terms of getting help and the agreement on both sides. And like the program Amy talked about earlier, sort of someone who's very invested and what does that look like and how do you do that? Is that challenging, Lydia, like for you to have the clients agree? Are they really willing? Has it probably a little both?
Both. Because typically they've called us because they want all the help they can get. But it is also like long-term planning. We know for clients is hard if this is what, you know, and if we know the effects of trauma and people aren't able to long-term plan if they've experienced trauma. So for some clients, like we're the first person to ever say like, let's think past this week or today. So that's what I think makes it hard because we don't have a time limit. We don't necessarily have like a money limit. It's more client driven and what do they need and how long do they need it for? So it would be nice if systems worked and we could say apply for housing and one goal done, apply for food stamps and you have enough money, get a job and it pays a living wage. That's the issue, is that none of the systems for clients to provide help actually help for the most part.
Thank you. Sandy in Seattle.
We're pretty much the same. We what's made a difference for us is that during the pandemic, prior to the pandemic, we had only a handful of people that we helped on an ongoing basis. And for them, it was every now and then it might be rental assistance, but it was primarily either a food card or a utility bill. We have one gentleman that we fondly refer to as Auto Harry because he needs his car and he can never pay his license tabs. And so every February we paid his license tabs. Since the pandemic, we've exponentially, we've gone from giving out about $40,000 a month in financial assistance to almost $100,000 a month in financial assistance. We'll have $1 million that we will have done since March.
I assume that's a mix of sectarian and non-sectarian.
It is.
Yeah.
It's about 40-60.
Uh-huh. Which way?
Non-sectarian.
Okay.
So we do the community. We prioritize Jewish households, which we have three definitions for Jewish, which is someone who just says, yes, I'm Jewish. We ask for their connection to the Jewish community. And they say, my parents were Jewish or something. And then we have the non-Jewish person who works for a Jewish organization, and then someone who says, I'm affiliated with the Jewish community. My partner is Jewish. My children's father is Jewish. So we will. And the reason that becomes important is we have a cap of $2,000 for the community at large and a $4,000 one-time assistance for the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm.
And during COVID, this has been all
per year or per lifetime, Sandy? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, per year.
Per year. Okay.
However, because right now it's COVID, this is just an exponential. The next year we'll be tapering off, and then after that, I think we'll be going back down. But right now, we're not. Most of these folks were helping to get over the COVID hump, I think, mm-hmm. is really. And we're working in conjunction with the money that's coming through from the feds to the county and United Way. We try to gap fill. Our major thing right now is seeing where is the gap? Where are the folks who need assistance that can't get it through either the federal money or United Way for whatever reason? So we are really looking at that. And we try to do when we can, particularly with Jewish households, financial planning and management. But during this past year, we have not made that a like a significant piece. It's when it comes up, all of our staff have 15, or I'm very lucky, they've all had 15 or more years of being case managers and housing stability specialists. So they hear and they will grab when they can. So that's, we're kind of, you know, in that.
Right. And I just had something you mentioned brought up to me. How many people work with a fair amount of people who are undocumented?
We don't ask for documentation, and we know because we're asking for if they've gotten unemployment benefits, if they've gotten all that. And when they don't, we know. We also have one of our financial assistant specialists is bilingual in Spanish and English, and she tends to get a lot of migrant families. So we know that, but that's
a big challenge for us. We don't require it at all. But then when we're trying to help people plan, you know, there's just so many less options available. And sometimes you have mixed status households, so you're trying to help them. You know, LA had a one-time $500 payment for anybody, but that's a one-time. So there's just, that makes some of those. What about, we haven't heard from Portland.
Jen, can I ask a quick question of Sandy before you go on?
Of course.
Say it's $1,000 a year maximum right now?
No, right now it's for the community at large, it's $2,000
a year.
Give or take, we sometimes will fudge that up. And it's $4,000 for members of the Jewish community. That's because we're looking at one, Seattle has extremely high rents, even quote unquote affordable, which isn't affordable. But on top of that, we're looking at people now with so high rent arrears with the moratorium. And we're planning, I'm interested in what all of you are thinking. It's a different topic, but I'll just throw this out now. Mm-hmm. What you're all planning to do when moratoriums end.
Yeah. Yep.
And payment plans and that sort of thing. But in the moment, we are on the theory that if someone has 5 months of past due rent, if we can pay 2 or 3 months of that, that at least will reduce their payment plan, particularly for people who are just now, the counties are opening up. People are going back to work, you know, so we are seeing people who can move forward, and we're starting to get data on people who I can pay going forward, but I'll never be able to pay this $8,000 bill. So that's the kind of thing we're doing right now.
Thank you. Thanks, Sandy. Lauren, maybe.
So we have a pretty small community here, but for rental assistance, particularly over the last year, obviously there's been challenges due to COVID. Last year we were able to be more flexible in what we could give financially, and this year we're trying to kind of scale it back to what it was, which is typically a few hundred dollars per family a year. So for people who have issues, they've lost their jobs and they have need rental assistance, it's really, we've been focusing a lot on like matching them with programs. And our county here does right now have a really good one for rental assistance that people can get like up to 5-6 months worth of rent paid. I've had a few clients that have been successful. The requirements are, you know, obviously have to have income issues due to COVID. They have to be late, but it can be 1 day late. And they'll pay utilities too as well on top of that. So I just had a client that is, got a job right before COVID, the best paying job she ever had, took on a pretty hefty rent, and then her job was severely impacted by COVID. And since then it's been like, you know, we've been trying to provide, we've provided some assistance every month for a few months here and there. And she kind of falls in that like in between category where she doesn't, you know, necessarily apply, she can't apply for housing or even Medicaid. Her daughter will get Medicaid, but she won't. Her daughter will get food stamps, but she won't. So we have a lot of situations like that, these kind of, you know, unfortunately, like in between. So that typically is a lot what we were dealing with. Like I said, she was able to get 5 months paid rent, which is huge, which will bring her almost to the point where her lease will end, which she wants to get out of. But obviously then that brings the trying to find something more reasonable where she can live. And that's a challenge here right now. Our housing market is very limited. Rental is extremely limited. you know, trying to work on those. And that's what we've been talking about, you know, trying to develop a program around more kind of financial empowerment, and what that looks like to, you know, make people sustainable and not have to worry about, you know, how do we get a job that's going to pay these rents and these bills? So that's kind of what we're thinking of next step. We do have a little bit of an issue sometimes with people that are not ready to change a little bit. They've been involved with the agency for a while, when it was much smaller, now it's a little bit bigger, and they don't really want to change or provide, you know, documentation of why they need financial assistance. I'm fairly new to the role. I came on like late January, and you know, that's come, we make them fill out like a brief application. They're resistant. A lot of folks come from bigger Jewish communities, and now here we are in this kind of smaller Jewish community, and they kind of think the Jewish community should kind of take care of them to a certain extent.
Yeah.
I get that a lot. And that's kind of challenging, you know, to kind of deal with. But, you know, just kind of working around those factors, and asking them, you know, it's hard to work with somebody and try to get them assistance, but they don't really want to divulge everything that's going on.
I think that's probably a common challenge. By the way, you're very new. You just started the end of January?
End of January, yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And about how big is your agency?
We are 8 employees and only one is full-time. Everybody else is part-time.
Okay.
I work primarily with the adult family community. We have another case manager that works with the older adults.
So change is hard also. So this could be clients mm-hmm. who come to you one way and now the rules are changing and you're new. Right. So that can be a challenging.
And also coming off of last year as well, where we were a little more freer with providing assistance, this emergent, you know, situation. We weren't asking for as much documentation, that sort of thing. And we don't ask for a lot. I mean, we ask for very, in my opinion, very minimal to get assistance. I mean, so, you know, that's still kind of, you know, but we don't ask for a lot. But, you know, but like the program that was described out of Boston, I mean, that sounds, you know, awesome. And the idea of what we're trying to get, you know, hopefully people can get some sustainability and income and housing and, you know, that's the hope, obviously. But we are in a really challenging rental market as well. There's no rentals for people. Waiting list for housing is really hard.
There's no housing anywhere. It's so hard all across the country. It's
really hard to, you know, one of the kind, like I was the one that got 5 months of rent. It's really easy to say, well, just move. You can't. Like there's not really anywhere for her to go. I mean, and she has like a very hefty rent bill and now she's not making any money essentially. So it's great that she got 5 months of rent, but here we are again, you know.
What I found a lot about chronic clients that kept on coming back is that their family members don't want anything to do with them either, right? So they really have no one and nothing because they've gone through their family. They've already tapped their, you know, brothers, sisters, cousins, if they have parents out. And
yeah.
You can see why oftentimes. So it's complicated. And also
too, we have people that, especially in this area, we have a lot of people coming from the Northeast that have moved in hopes of kind of getting into this, you know, lower cost of living. But once again, they have chronic issues that they're not necessarily dealing with. So it's kind of coming here and our lower cost of living is lower than what they're used to, but it's not as low as it used to be here.
Right.
You know, there's that factor too. So, you know, people come from up north or down, you know, from South Florida or something and hoping for this kind of, you know, easier life. They're going to find a job, rent's going to be a little less, and it's hard to, yeah. And of course, COVID, you know, on top of that.
And coming to the Jewish community and saying, I'm here now and I really need help. And sort of that feeling like, you know, that's what the Jewish community is here for and how much can we do and in what situations. And I think that's just a challenging place to sit. I just always remember when I started, I moved from working with older adults to working the main intake line and sort of coordinating that. And someone called and said to me, you know, I'm Jewish and I lost my job and I just need like $1,000 a month for like 6 months. Uh-huh. And like, I didn't even know where to begin. Cause I'm like, oh, it's going to be my job to tell this person who probably was raised thinking if you come to the Jewish community, you got to give to the Jewish community because the Jewish community will be there for you. And they really weren't like rude. They just thought that, okay, it's my last resort. I'm going to call the Jewish community. And this felt like a very reasonable ask to them. And, you know, I said, I don't think we have that, you know, I had to kind of say, I'll check with my supervisor, but, and it was before we had any financial assistance. It was about 9 or 10 years ago.
And we only serve the Jewish community. And now keep in mind that we're not like, we're not looking, you know, too much into that. Like if they associate, they, you know, they call them, they say they're Jewish, they associate with being Jewish. They, you know, we're not screening them to like the highest extent, but we only serve the Jewish community. I think that's the other side of it too. Some clients we've been working with for a while. Think that maybe, you know, there's this idea that maybe the Jewish community doesn't need help where they come from, and that they are the ones that should get the help too as well. So yeah, that assumption there. So.
And you're a pretty small agency. Yeah. Well, you know, I think one of the things I like that, Sandy, we work a lot on figuring how to even ask that, and the connection to the Jewish community is what we always say, what's your connection? But that can be a big challenge as well.
Worked on that a lot, and worked with our Jewish educator to come up with some wording, because it can be tricky on both sides for people who aren't Jewish as well, because our applications are open to either, as well as people who are Jewish. I mean, I'm not sure I ever know exactly what to say if someone says, how are you Jewish? You know, that's like, I'm born Jewish, or my, you know, you just really don't know quite what to say. So
yeah, and it puts staff in a difficult position as well. Yeah. Well, we have literally 2 minutes. So Lisa just asked me to come to the group. We have about 20 people here. And, you know, the question is really, we've done these questions in different ways. I think we all struggle with a lot of similar issues, housing, more chronic situations, you know, how intensive can you work? And the question is, would we want to go into breakout groups by size of agency, by, you know,
just random,
because there's, you know, training issues.
Smaller groups.
So, you know, I think, you know, looking at some people come regularly, we've had some excellent presentations from various agencies, like what would be helpful, you know, or would it be helpful to bring staff to something occasionally, because.
Or is this fine, you know, meeting together with 20 people here, you know, we could all be on the same screen, at least on my screen, I can see everyone.
For me, this is fine. I kind of would, if we had a specific topic to talk about in breakout rooms, that might be one thing, but I would miss hearing, I like hearing everybody's contributions and what they're saying. So personally, this is works for me, but I know some people like
what do other people think? Anyone else have any thoughts?
Tracy. Hi, it's Tracy. Yeah, hi. I'm benefiting from all of it because I'm relatively new to this, but I think it'd be good sometimes to go into breakout groups with similar size communities, because we probably have similar parameters that we're dealing with. I mean, when I hear about the funding for these chronic cases, I'm blown away by these wonderful big community programs that can do that. And it's a struggle for us. Chronic is a struggle. We're kind of set up to do, you know, emergency assistance, but not chronic emergency assistance. So we certainly benefit from hearing how other, more specifically even about how other people are getting the funding and determining how to distribute the funds with so many needs.
Yeah, maybe we could do sometimes, you know, when we come in and out about other
people. Yeah, we could break out and come back in and share, you know, or keep going.
So do other people think that? Well, Janice, Tatiana, you guys are here a lot. You think break out and come back together? We didn't hear from you, which is very unusual, Tatiana.
I think Tracy summarized it really well, that there is a lot of benefit from, I think today there was a lot of benefit hearing from everybody, but I can see that if we did break out from time to time by agency size, that could be very helpful. Okay. But I really enjoyed today the diversity of input.
Yeah, it was good. It was a very robust discussion. So
I always feel less alone when I come out of here, because it's like, you know, a lot sometimes to sit with all the need that comes and how do you manage it and those ethical issues too. It's a lot. You
know? Yeah.
Well, we're not meeting again though until August 3rd. It's a long time away.
Wow. Okay. Well, maybe.
Here and there.
Yeah, I was going to say this was such a captivating discussion, and Jen Kolakavod on a wonderful. Yes. on your wonderful leadership and Kulika vote to everybody who shared, because we're stronger together. But maybe if everyone doesn't want to wait, we want to pop up, especially with the moratorium falling off. So I think we're all, it's a collective anxiety.
Yeah,
that's a great idea to
do it.
Maybe it's not forced. We're not forcing anyone to come, but maybe we, the people who want to come to the pop-up, you'll come. And then the people who want to wait till August, have a great summer.
So Jen and Rebecca, stay on and let's come up with a date for the pop-up. I think it's a good idea. Okay. If you do you have time. Everyone. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, pop-up. It was great to see everyone.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.